Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton and our producer, Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, full house and a theme show today.
Well, hey, today's been running fast. We're back to back. It was a fantastic show a little bit earlier this morning, but I don't think there's going to be any exception here. This is going to be a lot of fun. We do have a studio full. We've got folks who have recently participated in the HIMSS conference as a result of our good buddy Anna Ruth getting this set up for us. So I've really been looking forward to this. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, we have with us CEO with HIP Nation. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Will Hall. How are you, man?
I'm fantastic. Thanks so much for having us.
Well, Will, can you share a little bit about HIP Nation? How are you serving folks?
Yeah, HIP Nation is a healthcare solutions company. We remove insurance from about 90% of healthcare, makes it more affordable, makes it more accessible for folks. So HIP Nation's a membership model. Folks join, they get a 24/7 concierge physician, and we have a team of about 100 specialists supporting those primary care physicians. Take great care of you. We've set it up so it's compliant with the individual mandate, still in place for this year, obviously. And we have solutions for individuals, families, businesses, both small businesses and businesses, you know, up to 500,000 people.
So this is kind of that concierge medicine?
It is. It uses concierge medicine as the foundation. Our product or service is Primary Care Plus. So mm-hmm. The primary care piece is concierge medicine, 24/7 to your own physician. Our members get their doc's cell phone. And then the plus piece is we built an entire ecosystem that kind of removes insurance for everything outside of the hospital. So 100 specialists in over about 15 different specialty areas all take a cash-based lower rate. You know, we call it a cash retail rate versus an insurance rate. So that pulls costs out of the system. Same thing for medications, labs, imaging, everything really outside of the hospital system. You have a little bit less than 10% chance of accessing a hospital in a year. So we feel like that's where insurance should be. Very similar to your car insurance. You have car insurance for a wreck, but not car insurance for...
For something more catastrophic. I mean, to me, that's the best sales language I've heard all week is removes insurance. Yeah, you had me
with
that.
That's what we try to do.
but there's still a place for more traditional, something like that, for more catastrophic stuff, right?
Exactly where it should be. It should be just like your car insurance is you have the wreck, but not for your oil change or getting new tires or brakes. So we've gone out to the market. We partnered with an insurance company for individuals. Versus things that are on the exchange, the savings are about 50%, no deductible, and no barriers to care. So primary care, 24/7, you see your doc, talk to your doc, FaceTime, Skype, you go into the office, you never pay a copay. Same thing within those specialty areas as well. We remove insurance. Those specialists are glad to not have to chase their money and fight with companies over getting paid. So they get paid when they do the procedure. And so we've gone to the market, found the solution for families and individuals. And then really our vision of our founders to start with, who were physicians and a healthcare attorney, was to really go out and partner with businesses. That's what businesses are just getting, you know, they're really getting killed around providing something for their employees. And so the vision was HIP Nation started as healthcare impact partners. We don't think we're just five old guys trying to be hip. It started out as healthcare.
I thought it was for seniors.
Well, that's right. Your hip replacement. Exactly. You know, some folks have said, you know, is that the Hippocratic Oath? And we probably weren't not that smart. But it started out as healthcare impact partners with the founders of the company, a vision to partner with companies to impact their healthcare costs and the care.
So now the business owner, instead of offering traditional insurance as a benefit, they can offer HIP Nation as a benefit?
Yeah, we've actually built an entire plan. So you have HIP Nation, which is the 24/7 concierge medicine. So an employer with 100 folks, every single person gets a concierge physician, their kids, their family. And then we went out and partnered with a reinsurance company and a stop loss to build that catastrophic plan for exactly when you need that. You go into the hospital, you need something big. So they've gone and looked at all the actuarial tables and the risk. And what we do for a company is we take them out of a fully insured environment, which is often double-digit increases year after year. We take them out of that, drive the cost down, and give better care. The foundation is way better care. When you're connected to a 24/7 primary care physician, the numbers are astounding around how much healthier people get, the cost you bring out of the system, and all those kind of things.
Now, having access to all of that care on demand like that, is there, how does it impact like kind of wellness services, or are there any wellness services associated with this?
Yeah, great question. Actually, the statistics around being connected to a 24/7 physician where you have that doc cell phone and there's no barriers to care, the statistics around that are way better than any wellness program ever. You know, mm-hmm. you're 80% less likely to have surgery. You're 60% less likely to be in emergency room or urgent care. If you're in the hospital, you spend a third less days there. Because now you have your primary care physician becomes the advocate in the system, no longer a gatekeeper or a triage point, seeing 30, 40 people a day. Our physicians only have a panel of 700 folks. So you drastically pull that panel down. Now they're able to spend time with me and you keep us out of the hospital. If I go into the hospital for some reason, now I've got my primary care physician coordinating with the hospitalist and that group inside the hospital to drive care. And the stats show if I go in the hospital, I'll have a third less day spent in the hospital.
And but do they have access to all the hospitals? Like how?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, our plan around the or for the businesses accesses all of the hospitals. The individual plan uses PHCS as the physician network. That's the largest hospital network in the country. So if you had an individual plan or a family plan or a small business, we've got quite a few businesses that 6, 8, 9, 10 people, which have really been left out in the cold. When they pull that together, they use PHCS, largest network in the country. You know, and so folks that are in sales and traveling, you need to go to the emergency room. You walk in the emergency room with a PHCS card. But first thing you do is you call your primary care physician and say, hey, I'm in California. This is what's going on. There's about a 60% chance they'll keep you out of the hospital. And if they say, well, you need to go to the emergency room, I walk in with a PHCS insurance card.
Did you really say the word Skype earlier in the conversation? Or was I just...
However you need to talk to your physician. So
because there are times when you might want to... You don't go, really
hey,
need
look
to
at this
in,
thing
right?
on my arm.
We have physicians FaceTiming. We had a mom told a great story of her daughter getting home from play practice late one night with some crazy rash. Called the physician, tell her about the rash, sends a picture over. Lets her take a look at it. And she says, yeah, that's not sure. Let me see her in the office. What time? Just come in at 8. You know, because when you pull the panels down, you know, docs aren't seeing a patient every 10 or 15 minutes because the system changes. The mom has her daughter in the office at 8. They're out of there by 8:30. They pick the cream up on the way and the kid's at school by 9 o'clock.
This greases the skids. I mean, the whole financial piece of it aside, just this aspect of it.
I know, this is
you know
dream.
He is singing my song.
I know,
we've had this conversation. Well, I've always been frustrated. Well, I'm sure I'm not the only one with this. The whole way the insurance, healthcare insurance industry works, in all cases, even when I pull up to get a prescription and they charge me a penny, because I'm smart enough to know I'm paying a lot more than that penny. And I just, it all just is crazy. And I think at the root of it is this business of insuring against, you had a great analogy with the oil changes and stuff.
Exactly.
To buy that kind of insurance for just life and living just has never made sense
yeah.
to me.
Yeah. If you got your oil change for your car and you gave them your car insurance card, you eventually would not be able to afford your car insurance.
Exactly.
So it's the exact same idea. And, you
yeah.
know, we say, I need insurance if I have a heart attack or a major car accident, but I don't need insurance if I need a physical or if I have poison ivy or a, you know, whatever.
I got kids. We're going to have a few broken bones. They're going to do gymnastics. They're going to, that's just life and living. And you should plan for that, but that's not the right product. That's this other thing.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the numbers are too, you know, you think about your kids, they break their leg, they need knee surgery, things like that. You pull insurance out, you pull about 40 to 60% out of the cost with that. So on the individual and the family market, the way that works is you'd be able to go see our orthopedic surgeon. You know exactly what that surgery is going to cost going in. You know exactly what your insurance is going to pay. So there's no more bill charges allowed, adjusted, and all those kind of crazy things that make it complex for people. So we try to help navigate that system. But, you know, at its core, it's very simple. But as you start to talk about it, we only know how to speak the language of insurance.
But this is happening. This is no longer
it's
me
happening.
Dreaming. Yeah. This is a happening thing right
yeah.
now.
We have 5 clinics in Atlanta. We should have 3 more probably in the next, you know, I'd love it to be in 2 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, but we'll have 3 more kind of downtown and then on the south side as well. So we've been taking care of patients for about 15 months, signed up our first small group January of a year ago. and signed up a ton of folks through open enrollment as they went into the exchange. And the numbers savings for a family are pretty astounding. And so now we're, you know, we're out quoting and meeting with businesses. And the, you know, the interesting thing, again, go back to the car insurance analogy, is we meet with businesses. I just talked with someone the other day that said, gosh, we just re-upped with our insurance company in November. You can switch, right? Just like your car insurance. You know, why do you think they advertise all day, every day on the weekends? You know, because you can switch anytime. You shop your rates. And so when you give the get folks the idea that, you know, go and look at what it can do for your business. You know, we talked to a business with 75 employees. You're talking about $100,000 back into the business by switching the model. And now everybody gets better care, you know? So that's, you know, you talk to the business owner, what's it look like for my employees? And I said, well, it looks like now they have care where instead of a $40 primary care copay, everyone in your company gets their doc's cell phone, you know? And we built it with two tiers, because as you start to talk to folks, they're like, well, gosh, I don't want to leave my doctor. I've had him for 20 years. Like, fine, you choose plan two. It's going to cost the company more. It should cost you more. And we try to bring transparency back into the system. If I choose a higher plan option, I should pay more.
Right.
If I'm going to choose what is eventually going to make me healthier and what's better for the company, I should pay less.
There's another word I really like, transparency, because I've got it with that relationship, but also in looking at the services that have been provided to me or are going to be provided to me. A lot of that craziness is gone too, right?
Absolutely. You know,
that's nuts out there, right?
You said it's kind of a healthcare show. It's kind of the only place where it's hard to get the true cost. You know, you call and ask, well, how much is this going to cost me? And you get transferred to a different department and they don't exactly know. And, you know, my buddies who are in businesses outside of healthcare, you know, when you start to talk about it, like nothing works like healthcare, unfortunately. And nothing doesn't work like healthcare, really, for the consumer. It does not work. You know, so we're trying to be a solution to that.
Now, you're here in Atlanta. I'm sure this is a beta test to roll this out nationwide. Is that right?
It is. You know, we've got physicians all across the country that know about what we're doing. One of our founding physicians, Dr. Hal Scher, is in Atlanta, started Docs for Patient Care. I think they have physicians in all 50 states. And it became after the ACA where physicians banded together and said, someone needs to think about the physicians and the patients. So Docs for Patient Care has physicians in all 50 states. I think 30 plus chapters, grassroots chapters. So physicians have heard about what we're doing. We look at this as the, you know, the test and learn market, taking care of folks for, you know, about 15 months in Atlanta. It's working great. You know, my job as the CEO right now, I'm telling physicians in other states, no, not yet, because, you know, you just want to.
But you're trying to kind of get into the businesses and to get buy-in from businesses so that can be rolled out, that kind of strategy to roll out to businesses.
It is. Well, first thing we did is we built the business solution. Atlanta, obviously, busiest airport in the world. A lot of folks, you know, live here, work elsewhere. So we built a solution for folks that, you know, a business maybe has 100 employees in Atlanta and they have 20 in Dallas. They can still do HipNation because the 20 in Dallas would do plan two until we're in Dallas, Texas. And mm-hmm. I've got physicians in Dallas who are ready. So we've built that to scale it. And, you know, we say we know we're successful when we're all 50 states and we've truly changed the way healthcare is delivered.
Now, what's the profile of a good business partner for you? Like who, what businesses should consider this? Like,
well, a fantastic business is a business that's already self-funded. So they've already made the jump and they think a little bit differently. The business that, you know, I met with an engineering firm back in open enrollment, who just got a 43% increase on his insurance costs. You know, I mean, what business can manage a 43% insurance cost?
Right, because who knows what next year will be?
Who knows what next year will be? And so
even if you can get through this year.
Exactly. And so, you know, they were happy because they shopped it and ended up, I think it was in the high 20s, you know, but your what product goes up 20, 30, 40% a year? So businesses are just having a tough time. So, you know, that fully insured business, we've got a solution to help them walk through and understand getting to self-funded, getting better care for their folks. But I would say the ideal business for us at the moment in Atlanta is 25 to 500 people who have just had enough of double-digit increases. Just met with a wealth management firm yesterday and, you know, they talk about their, you know, the rule of 72, you know, a 10% increase every year. And in 7 years, you've doubled your costs. We met with a telecommunications company showing that you're at $450,000 now. In 7 years, you're going to be at almost $1 million of insurance in your business.
How long can you absorb that?
Absolutely. That's what businesses are saying.
So now, when they, you just want to have a conversation, because I'm sure once you show them the value proposition, it's pretty easy from that point.
Do they ever say no? Maybe
they're just uncomfortable with this.
Yeah, it's different. It's different. It's change. We're pretty averse to change. You know, there's lots of books written on that. So pretty averse to change. It is amazing to me to sit with someone and, you know, hear for an hour how broken the system is, the terrible stories, what it's done in their business.
It's the devil, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And to tell me all of that, and I present all of the answers, and they say, gosh, I just don't think I can do that.
Besides, I play golf with Bill, you know, whatever, right?
Well, I've had my doctor for, you know, however many years.
Yeah, but he's even got a solution for that.
I know, but you throw change and I got my doctor.
Then I don't care, though. This is happening. This is happening.
We're changing stories. It's fantastic. You know, we had someone jump on Facebook yesterday and, you know, I posted that, you know, the AMA just came out with a physician burnout calculator, you know, where you go in and you can see how burned out you are, you know, they're not fixing that system. So, you know, well, great. I know that I'm a 72 out of 100. Well, what kind of care am I giving? And so I posted on our Facebook and said, you know, our story is physicians who are excited about medicine.
Oh, the doc's got to be loving this.
Immediately, one of our new members came in. She said, I just had my first Hip Nation visit. The doc asked me a ton of questions, did no data entry, and nothing the entire time but talk to me. It was refreshing. So
what a concept.
We're changing the story. And that physician had told me probably 6 weeks ago, she said, she's in Roswell, Dr. Shake, amazing, takes care of me and my family. And she said, I have more joy in medicine in 6 months than I've had in 15 years. It's perfect.
Oh, that is fantastic. All right, where can our listeners go to learn more, to have a conversation with you or somebody on your team?
Yeah, so this? You can check us out at www.hipnation.com, HIPNATION.com. There's a contact us on there, so you can check us out. You can get the membership services. We have a ton of FAQs because it's a different way to think. Yeah. I think, Stone, what you said earlier, the model's working. We've been taking care of patients and businesses and families for about 15 months. None of this is, it's not rocket science. We've just bought all the pieces together. And I would say the key piece is founded by physicians who are taking care of patients every day and just kept saying, this doesn't work for physicians and it doesn't work for patients. And if we started over with a blank slate, how would we build the system? And it took about 3 years for them to kind of build the concept. And then I came on, been about a year, making sure we had everything in place. We've been taking care of folks a little over a year.
Was HIMSS good for you? Was that a good conference for you?
It was fantastic. You know, we were, we took our chief medical officer out there, Dr. Brian Hill. So I had some great meetings around that. Loved being with the Georgia team and the focus on the development of the healthcare team and innovation in Georgia was fantastic. So it was really good. We enjoyed it. Met some great folks.
Well, and we're going to swing back around and ask you some more questions about that experience. So, because we want to know all about what happened there. But keep up the good work, man.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
As you can tell, I'm kind of excited about this.
Hey, I'm pretty darn excited. I can talk about it all day.
HipNation.com website.
HipNation.com. You can check us out. There's a contact us. You can get to me through that as well. And we love to talk with folks, tell them about what we're doing.
All right. Well, don't go anywhere. We're going to visit with some other folks. And like I said, I want to talk more about what you guys did down there at HIMSS.
Great. Thanks.
Okay. Yes, sir. All right. Next up on this very special edition of Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us, with Remedy, the founder, Dr. Lucy Ide. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. You're probably so tuned in to all these kinds of things, but did you learn anything in that last segment or you're already kind of in the know on this?
You know, I sort of live in the middle of this issue that healthcare isn't working for patients or physicians, right? So we're really focused on a specific aspect of care, but really in tune with everything that was just said about, you know, why the model doesn't work financially, why it doesn't work from the experience for patients, and why it doesn't work from the experience for clinicians.
Now, your firm works a lot in the chronic disease space.
Yes. Right? Yep.
So what exactly do you guys do?
So we're a software company focused on chronic disease management. Chronic disease, when we talk about cost, represents about 86% of our healthcare cost. And most of our work is around diabetes, which is about a fifth of our healthcare cost, is just related to diabetes.
The management and care for the individual just costs a lot for the medicine and the kind of checking with the doctors and making sure that everything's regulated?
No, actually, that part doesn't cost very much. What costs a lot is the fact that we do a really poor job of managing it. We as the system. So having diabetes, you know, if you take sort of average healthcare cost is about $4,600 per person. Having diabetes, average cost is around $7,000 per person. So that's what you just mentioned, the medicine, the extra doctor's visits, some extra tests. But it's poorly controlled diabetes, which results in kidney disease, you know, kidney failure, heart failure, or heart disease, blindness, amputation, all of these complications that are totally avoidable if we keep the diabetes in check, are what drive the cost. So then you're talking $20,000, $60,000 if someone goes on dialysis per year, per person.
But when you say we keep it in check, you're not talking about the patient keeping in check. You're talking about kind of the medical community.
Yes, I do use we a lot. And I use that intentionally because this is a collaborative effort between the patient and their healthcare provider, right? Diabetes is a disease that people live with every single day. We as clinicians, if I use the we from the healthcare side, put this huge expectation on people of, you know, you need to manage this. And those people didn't sign up to have diabetes. They didn't wake up one day and say, hey, it'd be really interesting to learn everything about how my body regulates sugar and, you know, how what I eat affects that, how I exercise, how my medicine. There's a lot of complexity here. And the system just hasn't done a good job of giving people the tools to be successful. And so it's got to be a two-part endeavor. We've got to give patients the education and the tools to be successful and the support. And we've got to give clinicians the tools to understand that patient's needs and to really provide, you know, personalized care that meets that individual's needs.
And then where does your solution come in to help solve
this? So we make that happen, right? It's a software solution that's used by patients. So it's an app on a patient's phone that helps them see what their goals are for their diabetes, track how they're doing against those goals, share that data in real time with their healthcare team, and get feedback on it. And then on the clinician side, you've got data coming from all these individual patients, sort of the day-to-day, how are they doing? And then you've got data coming out of their electronic medical record of, you know, globally, how are they doing? Is their blood pressure well controlled? Is their cholesterol well controlled? Is their weight within range? Is their blood sugar on average in range? Because those are the things that have been shown to matter to prevent the bad stuff, to prevent heart attack, stroke, kidney failure, amputation, et cetera. So if we can bring all that data together, do the analytics on it, highlight for that clinician, you know, here's really this patient's challenge. Here's the treatment that will most help them get better. We can get people, you know, healthy much, much faster.
So now from the clinician side, they're getting kind of a dashboard that is seeing where that individual, I mean, obviously they have dozens or hundreds of patients. They're seeing kind of a, okay, Bill's okay, Mary, there's something flashing. So something bad might be happening here. I better get on top of that.
Yeah. So a couple of things that are happening with all the pressures in healthcare right now. One is that, you know, clinicians and health systems are being held accountable as we switch to this, you know, accountable care model for the outcome of their population. And so they need dashboards and metrics to help them focus, right? If I'm looking at my population, who's healthy, who's not, who needs my help? And so we do that sort of level of population management and really highlighting who's at the highest risk with diabetes. But then we also bridge that to the individual level of, you know, how do we bring precision medicine, personalized medicine to chronic diseases like diabetes. So it's not just about highlighting to the doctor, Mark, you know, is really struggling. It's then taking it to the next step of, okay, and what do you need to do about it?
So then something goes back to the patient that's saying, hey, this is a concern, or take these steps. Your weight's too high because you have a Wi-Fi scale and I know what you weigh now, or?
Yeah, I mean, we're leveraging all of those modalities of communication. If you think about, again, back to the fundamental model of what healthcare has looked like, this episodic model, you have a chronic disease like diabetes that you live with 365 days a year and you see your doctor 4 days a year.
Right. So you're going in every 90 days and then...
There's a huge mismatch there. So we're doing constant data tracking through, you know, wearables, connected devices. We connect to their blood glucose monitor, to scales, to other things. And then we're communicating through, we're allowing clinicians to communicate through multiple modalities. They can in-app message, they can text message. They can pick up the phone and call a patient. You know, we're not against that. That's fine. They can ask a patient to come in and make an appointment.
What a concept.
And it's just, you know, communicating with the patient in the way that they need at the time when they need it.
So now this sounds like it's wonderful for the patient to get that data. Is compliance on this difficult from the patient side?
You know, again, it is change, right? But it's, you know, hopefully we think change in a good way. And
it's their best interest. I mean, ultimately, mm-hmm. I know you keep saying we, but ultimately it's them. They're right. living with it.
They are living with it and by and large feel unsupported or feel like they don't have the level of support they would like to have. And, you know, bringing both the support and suggestions and insights, but also bringing a little bit of like, I'm going to be looking over your shoulder as your doctor and keeping an eye on you. And, you know, that can be, you know, both motivating from a positive way of, you know, it's going to help me get better because I'm going to get some more timely feedback. But it's also motivating of like, oh, you know, they're watching and maybe I better try to get exercise,
right.
as we talked about, and see what happens to my blood sugar when
I do that. This sounds like some of your early work with the like, accountability partner. It's almost like they have an electronic accountability partner. I guess they have a real accountability partner, but it's extremely well facilitated with the benefit of the technology.
But I'm just curious to know if they stay compliant, because I know that historically, I don't know what it is currently, but historically, you know, people have had heart surgery and then their chest is ripped open. They have all this thing and they say, okay, you have to change your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And then 90% of the people don't change their lifestyle even after going through such a traumatic experience. So I'm just curious.
I think the two aspects that we look at in terms of compliance, which isn't my favorite word, or adherence, is, you know, education and access. If we can fix those two things. So we do a lot of education to patients to better understand their diabetes. And then making healthcare more accessible to them. I mean, those are the two main barriers that we believe stand in the way of people being able to follow, you know, their plan.
But I would imagine that if they have all the, I mean, if they can afford to have all the devices that keep track of all the things that matter, mm-hmm. the physician is keeping track, their likelihood of a positive outcome is very high. It's more manageable.
Right.
They stay. They're not those ones that are getting amputations.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I can tell you, I've had personally, and I bet you more people at the table have. I have family members who have had diabetes, and it's not been managed well. Their fault, somebody else's fault. I don't know whose fault it was, and they have had amputations, and it's so. I mean, it's a quality of life thing too, not just the money.
Yeah, 18% of people with diabetes meet treatment guidelines. 18.
Oh man, that is disconcerting.
Yeah. And you know, that really falls back on the system. We have to make it more convenient, make it more understandable, give them the support. This is really the lifestyle part is very hard, right? It's change is hard, as we talked about earlier. But if we can help support that change, help them see the small successes along the way. You mentioned affordability, and I don't want to give the impression that this requires a whole bunch of expensive equipment, right? We support multiple, you know, existing technologies on the market that are low cost, sort of store brand technologies that connect into our system and are really committed, especially here in the Atlanta market. We're doing some really exciting work around reaching underserved populations. Mm-hmm. Because they, you know, above anyone, face the largest barriers in terms of health education and access to healthcare.
So now that 18% figure, is that historical? Like how far back, like at the beginning before there were technologies,
that's like the most recent number.
Is that going up or that's staying the same?
Fixing that.
Well, I know that you're trying to
We're going to make
that.
It better, but it but has it, stayed fairly flat.
Right. My point is prior to technology involved in this and they were just doing the best they could, what was their...
It stayed pretty consistent.
So it was 18% back then too. So there's a lot of upside going here. You have a lot of potential.
A lot of room for improvement. Right. Right.
So now what percent do you have when people are adhere to your programs?
I mean, we work primarily through the healthcare systems. Those are our clients where we work with them to deploy our program. And, you know, our goal there is to help them get their population into range, whoever they might be focused on. And you know, that's their goal too, right? They're already working towards that. Our goal is to get people there faster because this ends up current diabetes management ends up often being a process of trial and error. Let's try this drug. Come back and see me in 6 months. Let's see how you did. And that's a ridiculous way. I mean, if you went with any other area of business, sort of this let's all start at the same point, try the same thing, wait till you fail, then try something else. And it just has to do with how our system works. It has to do with the 8-minute appointment. It has to do with, you know, what drugs are covered. And by making this much more personalized and targeted, our goal is really to shorten that cycle. You know, we don't want it to take 2 or 3 years for someone to get their blood sugar under control. It should take 2 or 3 months at most. And so we look not only at what percent of their population can we get within range, but over what time period. Because during that 2 to 3 years that their blood sugars are well controlled,
right, damage is
they're doing
done.
Silent damage right. to their blood vessels, their kidneys, their other organs. Yeah.
So you're a doctor, you're a physician. Tell me a little bit about the journey from being a physician to entrepreneur. That's has to be an interesting story.
I've had a non-traditional career, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
Worked in technology and then venture capital, sort of on mobile technologies, then went into medicine and was just really struck by how dysfunctional our healthcare system is. And I often tell people it was sort of like the movie Groundhog Day, where I would go in every day and be like, you're kidding me, we're doing this again. You know, like I just thought that was a one-time thing that this was so dysfunctional, but no, we're going to do it every single day. And, you know, all of my colleagues are willing to put up with it because they're so committed to patient care and they're so dedicated to the profession. And maybe I'm just not that patient, but I felt like, you know, there was an opportunity to bring innovation at this moment when we have, you know, amazing technologies on the hardware side that are cheaper, more affordable, smaller. We have all these economic pressures and we've had some really positive movement on the policy side around healthcare.
Okay, so here's also though what I'm really digging at here. I'm trying to envision the conversation. You come home from your medical doctor office and you tell a spouse or a friend or your parents, you know, I've been doing this doctor thing and it's been working out pretty cool, but now I'm going to go do this. Did you? I mean, you talk about change. That had to be a very interesting set of conversations.
Yeah, you know, so I have 4 kids and my 3 oldest kids were like, does this mean that you're going to sleep at home from now on? So they were really all for it. So,
yeah, they were in.
Yeah, they were in.
So, but your path was you were in business and then became a doctor and then went back to business.
Correct.
So, but what was the impetus to being a doctor after being in business? Like what drove you to that? Was it from you were looking at it through a business prism? Like, I want to really experience this?
No, I mean, I consider myself to really be a scientist at heart. So in the business side, I actually worked for the government. I was a physicist and did communications sort of engineering work. And that's the kind of work I looked at from a venture capital investment point of view, but really missed the science. So I actually did an MD and a PhD at Emory.
But so wasn't the patient interact? You didn't want to deal with patients individually? You were looking at more researchy?
I think I was always interested in the science behind medicine. I loved patient care. I did OBGYN for my residency and absolutely loved the relationship with patients, especially in that area. But was just, you know, hooked by why is there this big problem and, you know, why can't we change it? And this is going down the wrong path, right? In terms of...
But it's obvious, right? Like to you.
To her it obvious. Is.
Right.
No, wasn't it? Like it wasn't this like, wow, well, you know, we can work around the edges, but you're like, this is something's not here working right.
Right. I mean, to me, it was a fixable problem, right?
Right. But and, it was obviously there. Like,
right.
And there's a whole industry around it being broken and okay with it to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, the reason it's been sustained in its current state is I think that there were, you know, there were some really strong forces behind that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're...
We have another guest making a monetary gesture here.
But for you, you're saying that I can work within the system to make kind of a pretty drastic change.
Yeah. And I think people from within the system need to be part of that change, mm-hmm. right? Part of the dissatisfaction with health IT in general is that much of that didn't come from physicians or nurses or clinicians. It came from the outside. And so
who didn't understand
right. the nitty gritty frontline day to day. I have to see, you know, 30 patients a day.
Right. In order to pay for all this overhead.
And right.
The math of this. Right.
Well, and the comment earlier of this, you know, individual seeing a doctor and saying the doctor looked at me and spoke to me the whole time and wasn't typing on a computer. I mean, that's one of the worst things that's happened to medicine over the past 10 years is, you know, having clinicians have to turn their back on the patient and be typing notes on a computer and talking, you know, without even making eye contact sometimes. And it's
right.
really,
it's a factory. It's a, we've yeah. industrialized it and taken the human interaction part away.
Yeah. So we need to get humans doing the part they do really well and get the technology doing the part they it does do. Well.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing where there is so much technology at our disposal now that can do a lot of the work of right. this to allow the physician to do the human part of it.
Yeah. And I would say it's not about the technology. It's about how we use the technology, how we merge it in the right way into healthcare so that it's, you know, really unobtrusive. I mean, that's our goal is how do we, you know, help physicians be better and nurses and physicians assistants, everyone involved, and help patients be better patients without, you know, requiring much of them.
Mm-hmm. So now when you go into these meetings and have these discussions, being an MD, that gives you the street cred, right? Now you've been in there, right? But now you're the one that, it's not some business person that has these theories to fix somebody else. You've walked the walk with them, right?
Yeah. And it always, in my mind, needs to be about empathy. Empathy for the clinician who we're talking to and empathy for the patient. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, we understand your situation. How can we make it better? We think our technology can do that, you know, but we want you to validate that for us. You know, we want it to work for you.
And what's your biggest challenge? What do you need more of?
You know, it's change. Healthcare is just slow and it takes time to do new things. There's been some really important movement on the technology side that is enabling technology like ours to integrate more seamlessly with electronic medical records. And we think we can really drive now the pace of change there. And that had really been a big holdup. You know, if you're a physician, you can't use two or three separate software systems. You can barely use the one you have.
Right.
So we're now able to be sort of within their electronic medical record. They might not even know we're there. And that's really important.
And that's what the goal is, right?
That's
to be
goal.
Seamless
yeah.
and painless.
I am so glad that we have smart, committed people working on this. No, I mean, I think it's very important. Okay, enough of that already. Tell me about Vegas. what compelled you to join the Georgia delegation and go down there?
Yeah, this was our second year doing this, and it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, I often tell people if we went by ourselves, we'd have like a folding table in the basement. And when we go with the Georgia delegation, they have this amazing booth located right in the middle of the expo floor. We get a ton of traffic from people coming to see, you know, maybe us, but maybe coming to see HipNation, maybe coming to see Springboard, but there's all this cross-pollination and they do a great job driving awareness of what's happening here in Georgia.
And that, does every state have a delegation like that?
No, I think we're the only one.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's the commitment to Georgia. Who's behind the delegation? Is that TAG or is it the
Chamber?
No,
it's the Georgia Economic Development.
Economic Development that's behind it?
And Chamber, yeah.
And then, so that's good for us. Kudos for us for doing that because that gives, like you said, firms like yours that maybe couldn't afford to have a big booth or to stand out, it gives you access to that community.
Yeah. And I think it really does, you know, serve the chamber's goal and others
right.
of driving awareness because this year we just had back-to-back meetings at our booth. I felt like I'd graduated that people will actually come meet with me. I don't have to go find them. But everyone would always ask like, what's up with the Big Peach? What's up with Georgia? Why do they have a booth? And I think those are the questions they want other folks to ask.
So this has been a good environment for you, the healthcare IT ecosystem here in Georgia.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're down at ATDC, down near Georgia Tech, and there are a lot of important thought leaders around health IT and interoperability who are located at Georgia Tech. So it gives us access to all of that talent there.
And you participated in the Health IT Super Bowl? Yeah. Does that sound familiar? No?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's just what they were referring to, hymns.
Oh, okay.
So, if somebody wanted to learn more, where should they go?
They can go to remidi.com, RIMIDI.com.
And then what's on the website? They can get white papers. You have information about...
Yeah, they can even sign up for a demo right there. If it's someone from a health system or a clinician who wants to learn more about our platform and how it actually works, how it, you know, supports their workflow and their goals, they can sign up right there online.
And the ideal customer for you is a medical practice that focuses on diabetes or heart disease or other chronic diseases?
Yeah, I mean, our ideal customers are really primary care. That's where these chronic diseases need to be managed. It's a numbers game, right? Mm-hmm. We can't be sending everybody, you know, 30 million plus people with diabetes to specialists. There aren't enough specialists and it's not cost effective. So really primary care practices, health systems who've bought up a lot of these primary care practices and are trying to optimize and standardize care, improve the level of care across their population.
Good stuff.
Hey, stay with us. We got one more guest we're going to visit with. All right. Lee, you ready for the headliner?
I am.
All right. Well, he's been very patient. He's nodded his head a lot. I thought I saw him taking a couple of notes during these last two segments. We have with us on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, President and COO with Springboard Benefits, Mr. Richard Nelly. Good afternoon, sir.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Springboard. What are you out there doing for folks?
Well, it's been interesting listening to the other two speakers because it's a really fantastic setup for what we do. You know, if you attended HIMSS, you know that the health system is big, it's complicated. You know, it's highly regulated and it changes daily. And we have seen, you know, unprecedented change and, you know, innovation being brought to bear. We went through a 5-10 year period where we've adopted electronic health records, the whole reimbursement structure for how insurance companies reimburse for care, focusing on wellness programs and proactive management of chronic disease. We've seen a lot of these initiatives come to bear. And when you walk around the HIMSS, there's a lot of that stuff out there. The problem is almost every one of those key initiatives has dramatically changed how we as consumers have to interact with the system. You know, historically, we've been kind of along for the ride, whether we're a parent or a patient. You know, we went through open enrollment at our employer. They offered us 3 or 4 health plans. We checked a box. We got sick. We went to the doctor. We pretty much did whatever he or she said to do. Hopefully we got better. The doctor sent a bill to the insurance company. Hopefully they got paid. But we were kind of outsiders in that process. And today, that creates massive problems for insurance companies, employers, and the risk bearers who are the sponsors of these initiatives, like a disease management program for diabetes or some sort of transformational way care, you know, chronic care or acute care can be delivered to, you know, consumers. And we really attempt to solve that problem. And we do that through leveraging, you know, what we've all known historically as an open enrollment period. So we transform this open enrollment period to be the beachhead to begin to activate and elevate that consumer experience in a more informed, educated, advanced way.
So your clients are the employees of companies?
So there's two parts to that. So we, the sponsors of these benefits. So the one dynamic here, as this consumer role has shifted, there's this new world of, there's an expanded universe of benefits that are now brought to bear. It's no longer just a medical plan, medical, dental, vision, and a life insurance. It's those things plus a disease management program, a wellness program, dietitians coming to the home with food that's more healthy, someone showing up to your house in a Prius wanting to install a scale in your bathroom to your house. So no, that's really happening. I mean, Lyft, this is really interesting. You know, the Lyft and Uber are now healthcare companies. You know, it's if you're a HIP Nation and you've contracted with an employer to bring, you know, route patients into your network, you got to get them there. You know, Lyft and Uber,
They'll go get you and bring you to the care site.
So the problem is the consumer, we are now a very complex process, a part of a highly complex process most of us know very little about. Mm-hmm. And historically that didn't matter because because the pain, the consumer was the one who incurred the pain. Today, that's not the case. The insurance company, the employer, something known as an accountable care organization, Piedmont here in town is a large ACO. They share financial risk when patients aren't cared for appropriately.
So if the patient's outcome wasn't what it was supposed to be, it's not just the patient's problem.
It's not just the patient's problem. And so this universe of benefits has been brought to bear. And the problem is because they've enjoyed very low participation because the consumer either didn't know it was available, couldn't sign up, signed up, but couldn't consume the product. And so we really solved that problem by taking the open enrollment period, offering those advanced benefits, you know, from the employer to the consumer, and steer them into some programs and products that are good for them as the consumer, but really good for the carrier and the employer. So if you're registering in, say, enrolling in a Cigna medical plan, and we know you're diabetic, Cigna wants you in the Remedy disease management program. So, you
know, that's good for everybody.
It's good for the system. It's good for everybody. So we route you into that. And if you're in the disease management program.
So you're kind of the quarterback of my benefits.
Yeah. In many, many ways, we create a connected hub to all these data points and products that are out there because they're offered through many different carriers, many different sponsors. And that's part of the problem that we solve is we sort of consolidate all of these products into a single connected hub that the consumer can leverage during the open enrollment period, but continue to come back throughout the year. So if I'm on a Cigna plan, now I need an appointment. Here's my endocrinologist that's going to manage my chronic care for diabetes. Here's his scheduling book. Here's the physicians in my network.
So you're doing things to remind me and ping me that, hey, are you saying, hey, you know, you signed up for vision care and you haven't been to the eye doctor?
So we are, yes. Think of Mint.com for your finances. Right. You know, we're doing the same thing for your health and the clinical and the financial and well-being aspect of you, your care overall. Much like in a very modern, secure, socially, you know, social media looking technology. The way consumers today want to buy, you know, we want to interact with our financials, you know, in a mint.com on our schedule.
So what's your thing called? It's not called mint.com. What's your product?
It's our brand is Iris.
Iris.
Hello Iris is our...
So I'm a consumer. I have the Hello Iris app or... And how do I interact with
it? And this is part of why healthcare is so complicated, right? We heard earlier about the slow, you know, to change. And there's a lot of inertia in the system. You know, the system's been operating 20 years the same way. And so one of the things we have to do as a industry is, you know, realize that we don't have to fill out forms to enroll in benefits anymore. You know, we can do things differently.
I like the sound of that.
And so the good thing for all of us is the payers or the risk bearers, insurance carriers, large self-funded, they have figured out, they are now aware and have real incentive to engage and activate their members and their employees in a much more effective way than they ever have.
And is this good? Do you guys have to play nicely with the payroll systems and all that stuff? Is that true?
That's absolutely right. And that's a key part of this connected hub. And so if you were to say purchase, if you had a heart condition, a chronic health problem and with your heart, the insurance company would love for you to go to a gym and eat better. So we would steer you into a dietitian type program where somebody might show up to your door with a basket of fruit and vegetables as opposed to a pizza from Domino's. But the consumer's got to know that it's possible, you know, and know how to consume it. And that's part of what, you know, it's a big part of what we do is expose those benefits in a way that they can understand and they can consume it, but then make it, to your point, you know, in some cases, a payroll deduction.
Right. Because there was a time, there was a time when all those benefits were just in a big folder and you didn't even know what, you know, 80% of them were, and you didn't really pay that much attention. But you're saying that nowadays there's more of an incentive for everybody for you to maximize the use of some of these services in order to get the best outcome ultimately for some of the issues that you're having health-wise.
That's right. I mean, think of it this way. You know, 5-10 years ago, an employee might have 8 choices to make on their benefits in a folder. And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here. You know, a United Healthcare has hundreds of what are referred to as value-based programs. And so instead of 8 or 10 benefits to choose from, an employee could have hundreds. And you know, the system wants that employee in the right programs that are best for her.
So the consumer gets the outcome, because now it's more outcome oriented, right?
The consumer gets the outcome, and I hate to say this because I do, you know, all of us in health IT have some sort of story about why being empathetic to the industry and caring for people. We all have some story there, but we're also,
otherwise we wouldn't do it because it's too hard.
And it's, but we're also capitalists, and the reality for Springboard, what we do fundamentally is increase participation in those value-based programs that are good for the consumer, but are financially beneficial to the system.
Right.
There's an insurance company that we distribute through. Their book of business for these value-oriented benefit programs is about $300 million in Florida, Georgia, and Alabama.
That's a lot of money, even to you, Lee.
It starts adding up.
So are you having these conversations with businesses? Is that who you're calling on to?
So we generally distribute through the insurance company or the broker. So a benefit broker that's selling packages of benefits to
So this would be one of the benefits in that package.
It would be a platform to manage and enroll and manage over time all of those benefits that they now package.
Everything sits underneath your umbrella.
That's right. We're a marketplace in some way. We don't necessarily call it that, but we are a platform for the carrier and the employer to expose these new, greatly expanded set of benefits in an informed,
elegant,
more effective way.
That's more elegant and more easier to manage and deal with than it historically has been.
We consistently, you know, this is one of the things I enjoy most about our business. And I've been a kind of an early stage healthcare IT guy most of my career. And many of our businesses were really complicated. You know, I did a lot of time explaining stuff. The beauty of what we're doing now is we're increasing participation in these benefits by 10 to 20% consistently. And so if you're that large commercial insurance company in the Southeast with a $300 million book of business, you're putting $30 million on your top line overnight. And as much as I like to think that we're doing it for the good of the consumer and the patient, the money is what's driving the industry. And it will, in my opinion, it is what will drive it. It is what will break the inertia that's, you know, caused us all to have such high degree of anxiety.
So insurance brokers are prospects for you because you want them to distribute this to their clients, right?
That's right. So we
financially, there's an incentive for them to
more participation in the insurance benefit product is more revenue to the insurance company and more commission to the broker. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to know anybody in that space, that's language they know. I've never had to explain that to anybody that works in that employee benefit mm-hmm. world or an insurance company. More revenue, more money to me.
And then, so you're based here in Atlanta?
We are based in Atlanta.
But your product can be used anywhere in the country?
We've got, we're deployed coast to coast. We deploy through some very large commercial insurance companies, as well as some of the largest life and not just medical, but life insurance. And as you said earlier, a lot of the payroll companies are getting into this space too, because it's
that makes sense.
When you're dealing with the employer, the money starts to get it really gets managed by the payroll
first, right?
Because
right.
you're taking money out of paychecks and, you know, distributing it all over the place.
So it has to work with that group in order to be effective.
It has to
integrate
it. All of the data has to move around. And I know, you know, we spend a lot of time designing and talking about this very elegant client experience, customer experience that our clients enjoy. There's a tremendous amount of operational kind of ugly back end data that's moving around all the time that mm-hmm. makes all this go, you know. And you know, there's some non-trivial pieces of our business that do that.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't think you have to be timid about this money and profit thing at all. If you're genuinely serving people and you're making the whole ecosystem better, you're making the experience and the product and the service better for the consumer, and you're tightening the business model for the provider, you should be making more money. And if you're operating from that mentality with that set of motives, the more money you make, the more people you can help, the more people you help, the more money you can make. And that's the way the whole thing's supposed to work, in my opinion.
Well, my point really was, you know, I didn't mean to seem self-serving. Really, my point was, until the system, you know, we all work in this ecosystem that is the healthcare system.
Till Lucy gets it fixed.
Well, really, here's the thing, you know, in my opinion, one of the key problems we all have in health IT is that much of the innovation that's been brought to bear, and I know Lucy will back me up on this, I'm crossing my fingers here, but much of the innovation that's been brought to bear has been, you know, brought forth and deployed by one constituent of the health system at the expense of another. You know,
that's an interesting point.
So yeah. You know, the people who wanted electronic health records in their hospitals did it, but now the doctors got slowed down and saw less patients. And so, you know, until we take the friction out of that innovation, and for the brokers and carriers here at the table, they speak the language of revenue and commissions.
Sure.
And until we make it good for them, which we're doing.
Yeah. But that's what's going to grease the skids.
It can't really, until it's good for them, it really can't be good for the consumer.
It's all about alignment, right? Yeah. Alignment of what's good for the consumer, what's good for the healthcare system, what's good for the insurance company. And I think we're seeing a lot of really great innovation where those things are all coming together.
All right. So Lucy was all business, but I'm just going to ask you straight up, who's playing in Vegas right now? What's the show we should have seen?
Well, you absolutely should have gone to see the Beatles Love Show at the Mirage. If you're into music, there was Maroon 5 was out there during the week. I did not go. And there was four basketball tournaments out there at the same time at the end of the season.
So. Yeah.
You know, Vegas is an interesting town. You know, if we had the SEC basketball tournament in Atlanta, that would be the talk of the town. You know, the Vegas had the Pac-10 tournament, the Big 12 tournament, and two others, and it was just like
I wouldn't even know.
Wasn't even the biggest thing going on in Vegas. But
so now, for HIMSS is important for you, right?
It is. You know, it's the first time that Springboard has participated. Being in the industry in 25 years, I've been to a lot of these events. I think I remember being at a HIMSS event in San Antonio where it was at a hotel ballroom. with tabletops. There's probably 50 companies there. You know, on one hand, it's, you know, it's obscene. It's in many ways, it's obscene. You know, some of the companies will spend millions of dollars on their, you know, booths and whatnot. And in an industry that's hemorrhaging money and not particularly efficient, you know, I walk around and I, you know, wish sometimes we could redeploy some of that capital on, you know, some of the things that maybe really do matter. But it's a great environment to develop business to business relationships with the other innovators who are trying to.
Well, it's unique that there's a time when everybody's together in one place. I mean, that's a good thing. Right. Now, if somebody wanted to learn more about Springboard, where should they go?
Springboardbenefits.com would be the best place to go. There's all sorts of links and info requests out there. You can also find me on my LinkedIn page, and we can fill your inbox full of all sorts of propaganda that you may or may not want.
Now, overall, it sounds like everybody in the room had a good HIMSS experience and was appreciative of the Georgia delegation being part of that.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So you're all super fans and might consider attending again through the Georgia delegation. I don't want any commitments, but maybe you'll consider it.
Definitely.
For sure.
The delegation will be there.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's definitely a differentiator for Georgia. I mean, Georgia is, you know, is largely seen, you know, as if not the, certainly a, you know, a thought leader and a center for healthcare tech innovation. And
let's go with them next year and do a radio show on site.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Now, are you seeing that because of the density of healthcare IT firms here in Atlanta and Georgia, talent is coming here? Are you having an easier time finding talent for your companies?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say there's a lot of good talent coming out of the local universities here. We almost always have interns, whether it's technology-focused students from Georgia Tech who are studying, you know, health IT and some of the really innovative stuff happening, and they get really excited to have a company in town that's using some of those new technologies. Right. Or we engage a lot with Emory and their School of Public Health, and there's a dual public health business degree, and those have been great students. And great
having
talent.
The CDC here probably doesn't hurt things,
sure.
Right? Is that, you all see that from a talent, or is talent always a challenge?
Well, for Hip Nation, as we're recruiting physicians anytime, there's 60 to 70% burnout with the current system. We have a great pool of physicians contacting us. And the great thing is being founded by physicians. A little bit like Lucy said, is that these are physicians who see the brokenness of the system and have really, you know, I commend Lucy drawing the line in the sand and saying no more. Someone has to fix this. And so we're physician founded. Lucy, understanding from, you know, her being inside and the business side, that's really the perfect blend. But 60, 70% burnout rate, physicians want to do something different. You know, we've talked to physicians, you know, one of our physicians was thinking about going back and getting an MBA because the stress of medicine. She said, I love to learn. I love to be involved, but I can't do this anymore prior to Hip Nation. So it's a great fertile recruiting ground for us, but it's because of the brokenness of the system.
Yeah, I think you have an interesting blend of talent. You know, I'm a technology software guy. You know, not a physician. I've never worked in a hospital. Sold a couple of companies to an insurance company that, you know. So I'm a healthcare tech guy, and I've always said, you know, I can teach the healthcare background and knowledge is much harder to develop or find and recruit than, you know, software programming talent. Mm-hmm. I can teach. I mean, we brought a former patient accounting director into a company of ours that now runs the technology group at a large technology division within United Healthcare. You can teach accounting to a health, but you can't teach healthcare to the masses. There's no book or class. It's the school of hard knocks, and there's just the ecosystem around Atlanta. Even in the curriculums, they are teaching, you know, the concepts of healthcare, even if they're dysfunctional. you know, the billing codes, the billing methods, they're unlike any other industry. And if you can, you know, there's a pretty rich, you know, ecosystem of that around town.
Are there a lot more people like you, Lucy, that have both this kind of business, entrepreneurial, and medical background? Or is it just a short list of Lucy's out there?
No, I mean, it's really fun for me as I'm going around to, you know, health innovation conferences, like, or HIMSS or investor conferences of, you know, maybe I just know all of them, but there are, you know, other physician entrepreneurs and people who have, you know, just said, you know, I think I can make a difference on this. It's a problem that I really understand firsthand. And I do think it's an important mix, whether it's an individual or a team. I think it's great to have those multiple perspectives within the team to really understand the business opportunity, the financial drivers, but also the sort of uniqueness, again, of the healthcare segment.
But in order to fix the system, you think there need to be more people like you that have experience in kind of the belly of the beast?
I think so. I mean, as we look at our growth, you know, and sort of who manages our accounts and sort of supports our clients, all of those folks will have some sort of clinical training because I just have a really firm belief that they need that in order to best relate to our clients and their day-to-day work.
All right. Well, thank you all for being part of the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton, our producer, Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.